you know, with everything going on in the news, you know, I'll say bad people that we deem just they're doing terrible things.
Right.
Awful people. How in the world do you imagine, you can't imagine, like, why would they do this?
Right. And you wonder how they are the way they are.
Exactly. So I thought we should talk to a doctor who could maybe guide us through this situation, because you just wonder, like, you know, again, how do people either get this way? How
and when you talk about terrible things, you're just talking about just the people we see in our news feeds.
Yes, I'm gonna be very general about it.
Okay,
just things, you know,
in the news, perhaps.
Yeah, current events. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people think that, like, how did this person? How can they do these terrible things? And I'm sure you have people in your life as well,
right?
That may, to a point, do terrible things. So we brought in Dr. Peter Jonasson. You're in Sydney. So thank you for being with us.
No, it's not that late for me. It's late for you.
I was just going to say, yeah, we're the ones.
Whatever.
We're the ones really struggling. What time is it out there in Sydney?
It's approaching 5:30 in the afternoon on Sunday.
Oh, yeah, that's late.
5 o'clock somewhere.
That's late. But, Doctor,
If I wasn't on the phone with you, I'm sure I'd be drinking, right? It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Hey,
I have one. It's fine.
We're drinking in studio, so you go ahead.
Oh, well, let me have my brain work well first, and then we'll move on to the alcohol.
Sounds good.
There you go. Dr. Peter Jonasson, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're a senior lecturer in personality and individual differences at the University of Western Sydney. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Great. We just wanted to have you on because I found this article where you you wrote a part of it, but most of your research that you do is on the dark triad, which is negative personalities and that such. And so I feel like I just needed, I'm sure our listeners and myself needed a little bit of a reassurance or some sort of like, why are people like this?
There's some science behind why people are terrible.
Exactly. So just explain a little bit about your research.
In a manner of speaking, and I've been studying, let's call it the dark side of human nature for a decade now. Actually, in truth, I'm a little bit over it. I'm kind of planning on moving on to other things.
To happy people,
right? I'm not a fan of happiness. But I'm on to other questions, I should say. So most of my work has focused on either measurement, our ability to measure and capture individual differences in traits like psychopathy and narcissism and Machiavellianism, all traits that are kind of rampant on the ground, but they're also obviously represented in these current events that you're alluding to, not wanting to say the specifics about.
Well, you know,
we have enough.
We're just going to be general.
There's bad people out there.
Yeah. There's always bad people. But I mean, I think as Obi-Wan said, right, you know, it's a matter of point of view. So, you know, it's about a certain point of view. And so, sometimes people's bad behavior looks bad to us,
right,
but it might be advantageous for them, right?
Right?
So from an external source, right, you might say, oh, that woman beating up that man is a bad thing. But if that woman is protecting her child, right, from her position, it's good to be bad now, right? And so there's good, let's call it evolutionary reasons why quote-unquote socially undesirable behaviors can continue in the population. They don't get weeded out, and they're not cultural artifacts or anything like that. It's sometimes being selfish has positive both fitness as an evolutionary fitness, but also interpersonal outcomes. You know, if my goal is to extract immediate resources from a person, from a place, and I'm only going to be there for, let's say, a week, I'm on vacation, well, a mild case of this would be, oh, I'm just not going to tip at any restaurant I go to. This is not, you know, a major crime or anything, but it is a violation of the implicit contract we have with servers.
Right.
Because, well, hey, I'm only here for a week. Why would I be a nice person? It serves me better to just keep, you know, that money to myself, and, you know, I'm never going to see this person again. And so when you ratchet this kind of behavior up to larger scale things, when there's more stakes, this is when some of the worst kind of travesties of the world can kind of occur. So just go back in time about, you know, people like Stalin or Pol Pot or Hitler and any of these kinds of people. You take these, let's call them potentially personally adaptive strategies. And when you blow them up to the society level, they start costing the society drastic things, whether it's stability in the society, whether it's war, and a variety of other, you know, social ills. Racism is another one. The dark triad traits, for instance, are found more prevalent in people in the KKK, for example. Mm-hmm. So as another example of a quote-unquote social ill.
Yeah, I always heard that Pol Pot was a bad tipper, by the way, too. But
terrible.
So, I'm sure.
When you talk about this dark triad, the narcissism, the Machiavellianism, and the psychopathy, or psychopathy, are you talking about...
Either way is fine.
So for a truly, you know, whatever, quote-unquote bad person, when we're talking about these traits, is it a confluence of all three of these things? That's what you're talking about when you talk about the dark triad.
Well, there's a few problems here. So we have people tend to be black or white thinkers, right? So there's thought of like you're either a psychopath or you're not, you know? And it's more likely that people are some degree of psychopathy. And just before people get upset, let me explain what that means. It means that you have the occasional ability or the mild ability to, for instance, maybe not feel other people's feelings or to have callous social attitudes or to be impulsive and a variety of things. It's only a pathology when these things are interfering with your life. Now, of course, in politics, often these traits are a virtue because you push through problematic episodes in your life, or you don't give up when you don't win your election or something, and so there's a reward structure surrounding being in this way naughty, and that way. And so the traits go together mostly because they share statistical variance, not necessarily because people who are narcissistic are necessarily psychopathic, but they are a considerable amount of overlap. So narcissists can be exploitive, which is a key feature to psychopathy, and they can be manipulative, which is a key feature of Machiavellianism. And so if you get the dark combination and you're sufficiently high on all those things, plus you're in contexts that exacerbate those problems, like harsh childhood circumstances, or even present circumstances that are that encourage you to like you're a gangster or something, you to be manipulative and exploitive, then you have this constellation, this perfect storm, to use the George Clooney movie, that comes together and can create all kinds of bad stuff.
So we have more. We have a few more questions to talk to you about. We have to take a break. Can you hold on the line for us, Doctor?
Absolutely not.
Man,
he's got to get that beer. You know, there is drink.
You go get a beer. We're gonna take a break.
I was gonna have scotch.
There you go.
Pour a little scotch. We're gonna take a quick break and then the news here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to 720 WGN, Esmeralda Leon, John Hansen in for Dave Plyer this morning. We have Dr. Peter Jonasson on the line, who's speaking to us about the negative side of personality traits, I would say. Not the good stuff.
No, the bad ones.
I mean, but you need both, I would think.
Well, and then we're talking about the scale of badness.
Exactly.
Like, not everyone, there's a lot of gray areas here. But I read this one text, Esmeralda? Mm-hmm. Dr. Jonasson, thank you so much for joining us. We have a text from someone saying, an awesome with no accent that drinks scotch, not beer, you're not fitting any of the stereotypes.
Yes, it's because I was born in White Plains, New York, and I grew up in Connecticut.
That's what I figured. I was reading through your bio. I thought I'd let you say it instead of me.
Yes, yes. I'm an American, so yes, I just happen to be living in Australia for work.
Yes.
Doctor, I wanted to ask you, you named off some people, Stalin, Pol Pot, that kind of thing. I don't know if you can give me an answer for this, but why do you think people are attracted to those negative personalities of these people?
Or are they just that manipulative?
Right.
Well, a few things. I mean, let's talk about the traits aren't negative. That's a value judgment, right? So they're undesirable traits, right? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, what do you mean by attracted? And interpersonally, sexually, these are persuasive, charming, and sometimes even bullish kind of people who are able mm-hmm. to get their way, mostly because people don't challenge, don't want to speak up. They don't want to say, hey, wait, that sounds like what you're saying is, you know, is BS, so to speak. Yeah. And so there's often this, they come across as very assured, and people often don't do fact checking. This is one of those great things about these shows like The Daily Show, where they do all kinds of interesting fact checking. When politicians say X, they look and say, wait a minute, that doesn't pan out at all. And 3 weeks ago, you said the opposite of that. But they don't, that's in the non, say, romantic space. These are people who can be very exciting in a romantic space. They're risk takers. They're likely to have status and prestige. They're likely to be well-dressed and other things. And so there is some appeal, especially for younger women, to date, you know, bad boys. And while these traits are seen as evil, in milder quantities, they're really just, you know, being brave, being fearless, being ambitious, mm-hmm. and even being assertive, which are all qualities that pay off men both professionally and they pay off men romantically and sexually. And so there's, you know, huge reasons for these to be attractive. But like all traits, they come with, let's call it, collateral damage. And so there are downsides to dating someone who is, say, high on narcissism. They're likely to cheat on you, for example.
Wow.
But there's also similarly downsides to dating someone who is, you know, very high on, let's say, conscientiousness, so which is a trait that most people would say is a good trait to have. But if you're really high on conscientiousness, you're a bit of an OCD. You're very particular about how your house is organized. You know, your books are all in order. You know, you have all your records in alphabetical order and all these kinds of mildly anal retentive type behaviors, and this causes problems too. And so all personality traits are a mixed bag. It's just that because traits like the dark triad tend to have really strong externalities, mm-hmm. as in they cost other people stuff, as opposed to the OCD person who just can't leave their house without checking that they've locked their door about 50 times. Mm-hmm. People high in narcissism often outsource the costs of their bad behavior. And this is why society looks down on these kinds of traits, is because it costs the group. It might be totally beneficial to the individual, but we as a society say, no, that's an intolerable kind of behavior because we don't want to deal with the paying your bill.
Mm-hmm. And you have a way, well, you figured out somewhat of a way. I know all of this is very complex and all that, but you figured out the Dirty Dozen scale.
Yeah, so there are challenges to measuring, you know, anything in personality psychology. You have this, mm-hmm. Something that you believe is going on in people's heads, and then you have to find a way to access it without actually taking someone's skull off and looking at their brain.
Right. You can't do that
find
these
a
days.
Way
yeah.
To, no, not right. Yeah, I mean, we're not allowed anymore to do these things. So, so we you know, and I'd like to keep my job at least for another year or so. So.
Is that when you're tenure tracked?
So,
is
yeah,
that
back when you're... in I'm already tenured, but oh, you know, I'm you know, just thinking ahead, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So we had some problems. We had some concerns about older ways of measuring these traits. Older ways coming from as far back as the mid 1970s, and so we designed a new scale called the Dirty Dozen, and it's called the Dirty Dozen because there's four items that measure all three of the traits. And it really just captures, in the case of psychopathy, a kind of antisocial or kind of cold, callous social attitudes dimension. In the case of Machiavellianism, it captures a manipulativeness, an interpersonal manipulativeness, a willingness to lie. Mm-hmm. In the case of narcissism, it captures a grandiosity. I want to be dominant. I want to be respected. I want to be special type thing. And so it is not without its critics because it's so short that it doesn't maybe capture everything that earlier scales have, but it seems to do relatively a good job. We've just finished a study now in 49 countries with 11,000 people, and the scale holds up in those places, and we've been able to find out some really interesting things about how the traits are related to country-level factors like gender inequality or militarization or the kind of values that a society holds. And it works out the opposite way you'd think it would. It's in societies that are more liberal, there tends to be more, there tends to be larger sex differences, and there tends to be higher rates of these traits.
Well, I see, because I see things on here like, I flatter others.
Right.
Yes, yes, I flatter others, absolutely. That's one of the narcissism items.
Well,
that's a Machiavellianism item.
Which seems so nice, though.
Right. When I looked at the 12 of these, and I think that this is how anyone who would take this would say, you know, I think there's a few of them that you'd rate yourself higher on and lower on, and that's going to be natural as people take it. But what you're looking for, obviously, is kind of the confluence of all three of these things kind of coming together. I wanted to go back and ask you really quickly about the when you talk about the difference, the repeat what you were saying earlier. In the more liberal countries, you see a higher spread of, between the sexes. Do you mean in terms of the scores that they get on this, the representation of who has this?
Yes. So we don't diagnose people in any way. We simply get the mean scores that men have, compare them to the mean scores that women have. And this is holding up. This is an effect that's been showing up in other personality inventories as well. That contrary to what the kind of mainstream, what's called social role theory would predict, which is that the reason that there are differences between the sexes is because there are institutional or contextual cultural factors that create that make men. So if a society is more gender imbalanced, let's call it, or lacking in gender equality, that is what creates psychological sex differences. And what the evidence is suggesting is it's just the opposite. It's that when you increase gender equality in societies, you seem to actually open up the door for men and women to kind of engage in their, let's call it, their genetically, you know, derived tendencies. Men tend to be more oriented towards being antisocial already. With fewer restraints put on them, the sex differences seem to grow, and this is in various other traits like extroversion, as well as even in blood pressure of all things. So if you don't like personality, you say, well, that's just people making stuff up. You can measure people's personality, and you find the same effect, where the sex difference in personality is larger in more liberal places than in more conservative places.
That's very interesting. I see that it would be unexpected, but then you can see why the argument could be made the other way for what you see. It's interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And I looked through this list, and so when you sit people down, when you went through these and you interview these things, do they know? I guess I'm always wondering, you know, when you do these examples, do you mention at the start that you're looking for the dark triad? I mean, like, because I always wondered if people know the motivation behind the questions, does it form the answers to the questions?
No, you don't. You don't have to. You know, when you do these studies, one, you rarely do them face to face. So it's the majority of this kind of research now is done online. Is you put a questionnaire up online, and people go to the website that you've created, and they take it. And in the beginning, you don't, you know, fully tell them, oh, we're looking at the dark triad traits or something like that. But people aren't as deceptive as the cynics would make us believe. People are more interested in rushing through these things than they are in deceiving, and the deception takes a bit of extra cognitive effort, so they just want to get through them. We also, of course, give instructions that say there are no right or wrong answers, et cetera, et cetera. So at the worst, we probably have underestimates of people's darkness, if you will, and so long as we can find the effects we're looking for, we're simply providing conservative estimates of the role of these traits around the world, and it should maybe even be cause for concern because we have underestimates of these effects. Now, when we're just looking at correlations, it kind of doesn't matter if what the mean score is, so long as there is variance in the score, that you can correlate variance in one variable with variance in another. So that doesn't, it won't change the nature of the correlation all that much.
Interesting.
Okay. And we have a text. I know they're being a little silly, but the 630 here just is wondering, how does booze affect these strong traits? Because, no, but it's true. You know, a lot of people do say, like, oh, when you've had a few, that's your real personality coming out. Yeah. So do you think that has anything?
Well, I mean, I'm fine with the idea of in vino veritas. I mean, I think that's a reasonable thing, partly because what does alcohol do? As a disinhibition, it lowers your ability to modulate your behavior to the context you're in, right? If you're getting angry, we are taught, don't get all pissed off, don't hurt that person, don't yell, just be polite. But you've had a bit to drink, and now you're like, now I'm going to yell at this person. Right? And so it's not necessarily their nature as much as it, that they're actually an evil person. It's that we all have to deal with negative emotions, and our ability to deal with negative emotions is affected by our physiological states. And so changing your physiological state doesn't necessarily change your who you are as a person. It's a physiological shift more than it is a fundamental change in your or revelation of who you truly are.
It is interesting because, you know, I when I read the text too, I'm like, oh, that's kind of a silly question. But at the core of a current major event happening with our Supreme Court Justice nominee, Brett Kavanaugh, and the idea of drinking and maybe some of these traits coming out while drinking. I think we saw a lot of anger in his part coming out under tension and those sorts of things. And I think a lot of people, you know, it's really easy to read into one TV, you know, congressional appearance and read way too much into that. Yeah.
There's a huge appeal of people where they want to diagnose other people. It's very comfortable to label, right? Say, that person's a psychopath, that person's a narcissist, that person's an extrovert. Because this is back to what I said earlier about the simplistic kind of thinking. We want to put people in boxes. So if we say he's a psychopath, it allows us to dismiss everything he said, to not to say we shouldn't hire him and all these other negative things. And so it's a matter of kind of cognitive shortcuts. It's simpler for us to say that, no, the reason he did this is because he was evil. Right. This is in social psychology circles, this is called the fundamental attribution error. Right. This is assuming that the causal forces behind someone else's behavior is their personality. But when bad stuff happens to you, no, it's the situation. It's the situation. And so we jump the gun on other people. And oh, this person is evil because they're not us. As soon as it's us, it's like, no, it was context. It was, you know,
right.
I was drinking or all these other things, right? Because as if we step back and are honest with ourselves, we've all done stupid stuff when we were drunk.
Yes.
And so it's not beyond the pale that people make mistakes when they're drunk, whether it's mistakes that have huge repercussions for the rest of our lives, like drunk driving, for example, if we hit someone drunk driving, or just I kissed someone I shouldn't have.
Right.
You know, it's something as a stupid thing.
We got to take a quick commercial break. I was wondering, we wanted to talk about managing people with the dark triad traits. If you can just stay on a little bit longer, we'd love to chat more about that, okay?
See you soon.
All right.
Talk to you soon.
Exactly. Plenty more with Dr. Jonathan coming up after the break here on 720 WGN.
WGN, Esmeralda Leon, John Hansen, in for Dave Plyer. And on the line, we have Dr. Peter Jonasson talking to us about dark personalities, specifically the dark triad traits.
And that sounds so evil and spooky, but it was interesting, Doctor, is that we often, again, as we say, we put negative attributions to these sorts of things. I find it interesting that you really try and take that out of the study, that it's almost like an objective look at it, which is obviously what a researcher should do. But I guess my question is when someone, like you mentioned, Pol Pot, Stalin, when these people come to power, though, isn't it up to the people to start watching out for other people like this and starting to make sure that those people don't get into power, or is that just unavoidable?
Well, I think there are cultural contexts that make people like, you know, these dictators rise. But we have, you know, mild examples of these all over the world. I mean, you know, there's lots of actors and singers that could easily be considered high on narcissism. I mean, you know, Kanye West, just as my favorite example. I mean, there can be no question, right? But his narcissism isn't problematic, and if we were to go around policing everybody's narcissism, we would lose the upsides of those that narcissism. So it would be like taking a drug to eliminate the heavy swings in someone's mood. Most people who take these drugs for things like cyclothymia, where there's lots of ups and downs in their mood states, what they report is that they feel just blah all the time. It eliminates the down, sure, so they're not depressed and they're not trying to kill themselves, but they also feel nothing particularly interesting. They feel no passion for anything in the world. And you'd get the same effect if we as a society started policing these kinds of traits. We would lose all the upsides. Also, we would get ourselves into a quasi-eugenics realm where we've decided as a society that these traits which are genetic, which are in certain people, that we're going to say those people must be whatever, euthanized, sanctioned, any of these kinds of things. And so that we can't know as people living 80, 90 years, the potential advantages in a grand evolutionary scheme of why narcissism would be a good thing to have, why psychopathy would be a good thing to have. I mean, if you're a special forces soldier, it's probably good that you have a psychopathy in you.
Interesting.
Your ability to turn off your emotions when fighting enemies is a trait that is rare but is useful, because there's sometimes you have to kill that cute little bunny to survive.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, this sort of like the start of a movie, by the way, the
right?
eugenics aspect of it, like
the dark triad.
Exactly.
Right. Okay, so you have
we have conversations about this in personality psychology conferences, and mm-hmm. you get in psychology and social psychology in particular is a very heavy left kind of oriented philosophical bias, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to control and contort and say, these aren't the kinds of traits that we think are acceptable in people.
Yeah.
And so they want to essentially, how do we change people's psychopathy? This is a common thing. I have a PhD student working on something like this now, and we don't actually think you can make someone who is high on psychopathy no longer high on psychopathy. What we think you can do, and then there's at least some evidence to say that we're on the right track here, is that you can essentially neuter the psychopath. And I don't mean neuter like actually remove
right.
their testicles.
Right.
What I mean is neuter in a metaphoric sense. And so if you can undermine the tendency for them to impose costs on the world while not undermining their sense of, what they need psychologically, because these people have psychological needs mm-hmm. that need to be met also. And so if you can do both simultaneously, what you get is neutered psychopaths. And so we have some evidence that says that if you make people high on the dark triad, we haven't done that yet, but look at pictures of babies. There seems to be something of a suppression of their tendency to be aggressive.
Interesting.
Right? So they're not, we haven't changed the nature of the beast, so to speak, right? All we've done is change the beast's behavior.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm like, for regular Joes, you see this and maybe you see this list, like you lack remorse and mean and insensitive, and maybe you know somebody and you're just
yep.
like, what are you supposed to do then? How do you deal
I'm
with
sure
that?
I'm sure we do.
Is it just a matter of bringing a bunch of puppies to them or what?
Right, just pictures of babies
yeah.
every time you see your friend
yeah,
Joe.
Well, it may be one of the tricks, yeah. I mean, there may be other things that are coming out down the pipeline. So VR has the potential to potentially reshape people's kind of experiences that exacerbate these problems, right? So I have gone on the record repeatedly, and it sometimes hasn't gone very well, but I'm not afraid to say, look, yeah, I am a little narcissistic. Yeah. I'm willing to admit that, not just for my science, but I think it's a reasonable thing to say. But if you don't have the right circumstances around you, especially when you're a kid, that trait of, say, narcissism can dovetail in a whole slew of bad ways. So it's the trait alone is not necessarily going to mean you're going to do all these horrible things.
Mm-hmm.
It's the trait plus something else, or maybe even lacking something else. And so psychopathy is a good example. Evidence by my own hand, at least, suggests that father absence is problematic for psychopathy. And so why would that matter? Why would a lack of father in a child's life matter? Well, we see this in elephants. When poachers have killed the big bull elephants, says they want the big tusks.
Right.
The juvenile male elephants are just basically teenagers running rampant and being what you would describe as essentially a psychopath. They're being bullies. They're being obnoxious because there's no bull male around to, like, essentially give them a smack with their trunk and say, act
right,
you little punk. Not that they, of course, say anything literal, but there is a presence of maleness that seems to have a very unique effect. Now, contrast that to narcissism. Narcissism seems to be somewhat more tied to, I don't want to call it helicopter moms, but an overly doting mother and an overly, you're amazing, you're this, you're that, this kind of spoiling kind of mothering approach. And there's no, I'm not putting any fault on the moms, I'm not putting fault right. on the dads. These are statistical trends, and our lives are our lives, and they go the way they go.
Yeah.
It's just, this seems to be one of the patterns, is that if you build your kid up to think that they're special, regardless of feedback from the world that tells them they're not special, then bad stuff happens.
Right?
So we have a politician who's in charge now, of course, in the States, who is probably one of these people, and that he is unlikely to have experienced any repercussions for his bad behavior and everything. Oh, you're great. You just listen to how he talks. His self-delusion of how wonderful he is, right? It suggests that he's either never heard negative feedback, or he's just never listened to it ever in his life.
That's all I ever got from my mom. So this is perfect.
We live in a world now. We live in a generation where no one is allowed to be criticized. Everyone gets participation trophies, self-esteem. And what we know from 20 years of work is that all that talk in the 60s and the 70s, the hippie movement, essentially, about self-esteem, is the root cause of a lot of the problems that we find ourselves in today, because self-esteem became more important than competence.
Wow.
Love yourself.
Wow.
It doesn't matter. All that stuff doesn't matter, right? So if you just have self-esteem, we actually call that something else. That's called narcissism. Right? Loving yourself regardless of feedback.
Yeah. Hey, doctor.
Loving yourself regardless of feedback is narcissism. It's a delusion of I am wonderful. Now, liking yourself is good. Being depressed, don't do any of it. But if it is well beyond reasonable, you know, I'm just a professor, I'm 5'8", right? Oh, I'm going to get Mila Kunis. I'm going to get Scarlett Johansson. I'm going to marry them. They're going to date me. Like, get out of town.
Well, you need a few more drinks of scotch for that, exactly.
Right?
Hey, doctor, I hate to cut you off, though.
They need a few drinks of scotch.
Well, that's a whole nother discussion. Well, doctor, we appreciate your time. We do have to run to our news break now. We really appreciate
it. This is a lot to unpack.
Yeah, I know. We could have gone for another 2 hours. For more information, you can go to www.peterjonason.com. That's JONASON. Doctor, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure.
All right. Thanks so much.
That was a fascinating discussion.
That makes sense.
Speaking of participation awards, I've got a really interesting story after the news that I want to talk about, okay?